हरे ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Just one thing on second paragraph on page 28. So the Lord offers to the devotee a seventh opulence, compassion. This opulence is the headmistress of all other attributes. It is she who is enthroned in the corolla of the eight-petaled lotus, constituting the eight potencies like Vimala, Utkarshini, and so on, known collectively as Surup Shakti, the Lord's internal potency. So we also have this, so when the Lord is situated, then you have the technically what's called the yoga peat, where the Lord is means here is then explaining it according to energies. So the in the middle of the lotus means in the petals, you have the eight petals of the lotus with these eight energies, and then in the center, in the corolla, is the head of all these, which is compassion, or also known as mercy, right? Or this compassion has so many stages. That's what we were discussing yesterday. So that's where the Lord Himself personally sits, and then His associates are sitting around in the lotus, right? So in other words, there's Himself, then the energies expand. So the first expansion is the what is within the whirl of the lotus, right? So him and his Surup Shakti. Then we see is the manifestation of the Surup Shakti is all these other eight potencies, right? So eight major divisions of the Lord Surup Shakti, right? And then from there, all your other associates expand, right? So technically, then you'd have Radha and Krishna in the center, and then the Astasakhi would be sitting there. And then from there it expands out, and it just keeps going. So, yeah. So here then we see, is because it mentioned before, is that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was mentioning the reason for creation is the Lord's mercy. Right? So that element of mercy, that's what's important. Right? So that is what's in the center of the lotus. That's the Surup Shakti, you know, herself. Then after that, then all the expansions of all the other qualities and everything like that. Okay. So continue. We're on page 29. The devotee replies, "My dear Lord, O Supreme Person, you're an ocean of mercy. Seeing me swept away by the swift currents of gross materialism and becoming the helpless prey of the cruel venomous snake of time, you took pity on me. Your petal-soft heart melted, and to remove my lust and nescience, you appeared before me as the most perfect spiritual preceptor. Your appearance is awe-inspiring, like the powerful presence of the Sudarshana chakra is to his natural energies. You thus rescued me from the horrendous poisonous fangs and grim black coils of the snake of time. Your intention is to elevate me to become your maidservant so I may serve your divine lotus feet And so you have made yourself available in the form of the most purifying of syllables, your holy names, which are non-different from you. Your holy names enter my ears and alleviate my excruciating pain, allowing me to repeatedly hear, chant, and remember your transcendental names and pastimes. So his first point is bringing up is that being absorbed in materialism and time, then Krishna came in the form of the spiritual master. Right? So very important thing to note here is that there's a non-difference there, right? But the non-difference here is being presented is in principle. Does that make sense? You know, we put so much as that the qualification of the spiritual master, you know, they have to be nityasiddha, you know, and beyond if possible, right? You know, only the best for us, right? Us, you know. Those from the gutter will only, you know, settle for the best, right? You know, so
that's why we're here.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we're here.
That's why we're here. Mm-hmm. That's why we're here. Yes. So the idea is the spiritual master representing. It's a post, right? Like the minister represents the prime minister, the king. Right? So now, the better the quality of the individual, the better the office can be performed. But we always have to remember it has nothing to do with the potency of the office. Does that make sense? So, sometimes devotees like to make it so much of a distinction with the gurus and this and that. But the position of guru is guru. And is representing Krishna. Krishna sent this person. Right? So now, what their personal qualification is, that is technically, in dealing with tattva, a secondary consideration. Right? The primary is that the bona fide guru coming in the proper line represents the Lord. Right? Shakshad Hari Tvainasama. You know, from here, we like to get all bent out of shape about it. Right, you know, Sri Radhika Madhava Yordapada, and Nikunjayuno, and Sakshad Hari, and you know, like this, you know, we just build up our fears and our, you know, all these different things. But it's the position, it's the Lord's potency, right? You know, somehow or another, we'll apply that so much to the spiritual master. Of course, one has to be careful. This bona fide and everything, nature and everything like that, but we're not worried about the elements of tattva. I mean, so we can't distinguish the elements of tattva. But let's say somehow or another you go out and buy a sack of potatoes and cook them up for Krishna and offer them. You know, we have no problem that these potatoes that, you know, 10 minutes before, the day before that we bought them, you know, there are a bunch of, you know, punk laborers, you know, sitting on top of them and smoking their cigarettes and telling all kinds of, you know, lewd jokes and everything like that. And they've been in this truck and that truck and dumped outside on the ground here and there and everything. And it ultimately came from some guy's field, you know, like that. And that's perfectly spiritual. It's a non-different. You know what I'm saying? So we have to understand the post has meaning. You know, in modern day, you know, as mentioned before about modern man, I think that was in the other Ishvapanishad study, no? About how modern man doesn't like the Vedic principles. So, but the idea is that the spiritual master, it's a post, and that post has potency. We like it or not. And there's a way, there's an etiquette how we deal, whether we like it or not. It fits into our, you know, post-postmodern concept of social reality that technically is not a reality. But, though we think like that, it doesn't matter. The post is a post. Yes?
And you can say that spiritual master himself is a person, doesn't have enough qualities.
That's the second point.
No, but will the post give him the needed qualification?
If that sincerity is there, then one, that's how Vaishnavas work. It's just like, have you ever given a class? Okay. Now, Prabhupada mentions in the first canto, you know, so it's right off the bat. It may even be in the first chapter that someone who knows the six systems of Vedic philosophy is qualified to sit on the Vyasasana. Knock me out. Tell me how many devotees you know understand these six, would even know the names and the differences. You know? And we're open to any name. Huh? You understand? So, what's the qualification? This is sincerity to try to perform the duties. Because the point is the chit potency is there. It's connected. It's a matter of how much connection is there. I mean, how much potency is there, not the connection. The connection is strong. It's a matter of how much potency is there. So if we, by performing the duties properly, one becomes, one advances. You know what I'm saying? So, because we worry, not that it's an important issue, that the qualification of the spiritual master, but just as important as the qualification of the student. Right? So technically a student who has authority issues is not qualified to be initiated, let alone hold a post or a position within the Vaishnav society. Because our, you know, first principle is authority. Here he's just met the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly, face to face. What's his first point? You sent my spiritual master. That's the first point. Right. So we have to understand that the post has meaning. Then how much flows through that post is another thing. As one of the Gaudiya Acharyas was explaining, he says we're all like, you know, streams and rivers. And he said Prabhupada is like, you know, the Ganges. Right? Because he had so many together. Like Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj was making a point to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur that he was going to these various sabhas arranged by these, you know, varieties of Gaudiyas, meaning, you know, different lines, caste Goswamis, Jat Goswami, this, that, whatever it was, that they, you know, they would chant, they'd have an affinity towards Lord Chaitanya, but it's not necessarily the lines are very necessarily bona fide in the way of the parampara and the potency and all that. So then, the difficulty, he would go there and there'd always be something wrong. That he went to one program, he was there for 4 days, he didn't eat for 4 days because he didn't want to eat with the same people that were, you know, he was arguing against. Like that. So after that happened, twice happened, then Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj mentioned, he says, within universes, it's hard to find one Vaishnav, true Vaishnav, let alone a whole sabha full, right? And he says, one only sees such things in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, where thousands and thousands of devotees are pulled together, like that, because of that, you know, the Lord's grace, that potency, right? So he's saying that's rare. You know, so just be happy, you know. You're there, you have the holy name, sit down, chant, you know, like that. So then we can see if that's the standard, you know, this is reality, which must be, otherwise why would it be spoken? Then for Srila Prabhupada, that he pulls together and creates so many Vaishnavas and creates such a society, this is something unheard of. Right? Because before Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, it was only at the time of Narottam Das Thakur that you had such a great spreading of Krishna consciousness. Like that, where so many people were becoming devotees and everything like that. So it had been hundreds of years. Right? So then we see, then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was able to pull. So this is rare. Right? So this is what is meant by the Ganges. Right? And if you can save a few people, this is what's meant by a stream. Not that the Ganges means he can save people and a stream means, you know, can't do anything for you. You know what I'm saying? We tend to look at it like that. No, it's the volume of how much you can do. The drop of water in the ocean has the same qualities, but it's only a drop. Right? Does that make sense? So, the point... Does this make sense? So it's very... One has to see that the post itself carries potency. No matter who's... If they're bona fide, no matter who's sitting there. But one has to choose according to one's nature, that one can relate and one can take advantage of the instructions and apply it in your life. Right? That's what you're looking for. There, if bona fide line, great. Now you look for what's of similar nature. Does that make sense? And all these other things, they're for persons who have authority issues, basically. Okay, now the next thing he discusses is the holy name. So we got the spiritual master and, you know, his instructions that remove lust and ignorance. Right? Going back to the root. Lust is the desire to enjoy and ignorance is one's position. Right? You know, so one's knowledge and one's love has been perverted. So the love becomes lust, the knowledge becomes nescience. Right, so by the spiritual master, then that essential point of the living entity is addressed. Now the next is the holy name. Right? And the holy name is such that we can repeatedly hear and chant. Otherwise, if you had to say all these really nice Sanskrit prayers or memorize, you know, pastimes, and say, it would be very difficult. But here, three names. Easy to repeat, right? Two syllables each name, right? You know, one syllable, two syllables, easy, right? If you somebody has a nickname, you know, that shortens down to two syllables, they'll leave it alone. Three, you have to shorten, right? That's just too long. It's got to be less than three. One, great, but two is nice, right? So the point is here, three, two-syllable names. Right? So simple. You can just repeat it, repeat it, repeat it, repeat it. So even if you're remembering or not, it's still going on. Right? There's a good chance you'll repeat it properly, right? If you had this whole one page, you know, kind of definition, you know, you might get lost somewhere in between because you're thinking of, you know, when lunch is or something. So, you are reforming me, although you have kindly placed me in the assembly of your pure eternal associates and taught the process of surrender to you. I am so phlegicious.
Phlegicious?
Phlegicious. Phlegicious. And what is phlegicious? Any different from phlegicious?
We've got an addiction too.
Criminal villainous.
Criminal villainous.
Villainous.
Criminal villainous. So, you're a villain, but you're a criminal villainous.
Not worthy of being flagellated.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes flagellatus. Okay, yeah, worthy of being flagellated. So we're not talking about somebody from I'm not sure, one of those Baltic countries there. A criminal from villainous there. No? Okay. So whoever deserves to be flagellated, flagellated means whipped. Right? You know. I am so flagellous and fallen that I do not serve you even for a moment. I did not serve you even for a moment. I am fit to be severely rebuked for this atrocious act. Yet you spared me and instead made my eyes drink the most sublime vision, that of your beautiful, beatific face. And still you say, now I am indebted to you. These words spoken by my beloved Lord have deeply disturbed me. At this juncture, I am thinking about my next course of action, to ask to be pardoned for the sins of a few lifetimes, nay, a million lifetimes, would be audacious on my part. Audacious on my part. In fact, I feel my wicked offenses number more than trillions and have been accumulating since time immemorial. I have already suffered some of their consequences, and whatever is left, let me face them, for I refuse to beg for them to be absolved. Right? Because one feels that I have not done what's appropriate, so naturally I should, you know, get what's due. So I'm not going to ask remove that, because what would be the point of removing it? Right? Because we'd say, oh, remove it and then you'll be happy, but happy not connected to Krishna, so what's the point? Right? The point is that our happiness is only in connection with Krishna. So therefore the removal of previous sufferings or that or, you know, reactions to karma is not important, because by removing it, then what would that, how would that improve the service? Because you can remember Krishna now while things aren't going so great, so by removing it, what's that going to do for you? Right? So therefore it's not something to be asked. You know, that I may always remember you, may be always absorbed in you, may I always have the association of your pure devotees. You know, may there be an opportunity to serve you. These are valuable benedictions. Right? But to remove previous reactions is not, because it's not that that will improve the service. You can think of Krishna no matter what the situation. Right? Well, yes?
Here we are talking about the final stage of the bhavis that we're discussing. Someone is on the very beginning.
But I mean, what will be, what's the purpose?
Let's say to increase the faith or something. Is.
But then if it's a matter of if you only do that and then I'll have faith, then as soon as something goes wrong because you require the correction, then one will leave. You know what I'm saying? Means the Lord has to be able to maintain his position as the Lord. You know, and so it can't be a dictation that if he does that, then I'll have faith, because then that puts us in the main position. But one can only make those kind of claims if one has possession, but one doesn't. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, the daughter can say to the father is that, you know, you're the father, you're supposed to be kind to the daughter, so therefore you can say that. You know what I'm saying? But here, how does one say it? How are we acting in any way that there's a dynamic relationship? So, in other words, that's not the focus. We look at it because of our tendency towards jnana and karma, right? Jnana, we don't want to suffer. Karma, we want to enjoy. Because the point is if we're not suffering, generally that should intimate that we're going to be enjoying. But the point is remembering Krishna, that's the actual platform of enjoyment. Does that make sense? So we don't have to worry about that. Krishna himself will take care, because he's saying millions, you know, millions of lifetimes, you know, trillions of offenses. So like that. More than trillions. Right? Like that. So that we don't have to worry about. We have to worry about, you know, how to situate ourselves so we're thinking of Krishna. Does that make sense? He'll take care of the other side. Right? Otherwise, then if we ask for, you know, that you take away the reactions, then who's going to do the thinking about Krishna? You know what I'm saying? If we're doing Krishna's duties, so then, you know. I mean, he does do his duty by becoming as Lord Chaitanya, and so he does think about himself all day, so. Yeah.
This remorse for the devotee for his previous activities is not appropriate. Is this a manifestation of just his humility, because he's already, but he is already pure, or is this the stage where he's going from this for removal of offenses arising from an contamination arises from another. There was the final stage was when he takes shelter at Krishna's lotus feet. There was almost completely removed at prime, mm-hmm. and then there's the totally absolved when he's at Krishna's lotus feet. Is that last bit?
I would say is you have that element of that, but it's basically just pointing out is that if you have Krishna so wonderful and he's made all these arrangements despite ourselves, because when he's speaking here, he's speaking factually, because on the liberated platform, one doesn't have a problem looking at it, that, you know, one has been in the material world a long time, and so therefore you're talking millions of lifetimes. You know, I mean, in that we're just being nice, you know, because, you know, how do you, you know, otherwise you could say millions and millions, but, you know, that's, you know, what millions and millions doesn't mean 1 million, 2 million, millions means million times million. You know, like you say 1,000 thousands, that means 1,000 times 1,000, then, you know, so is that what I'm saying? So millions is that's probably bigger numbers than the scientists work with. I forget what's the biggest number they work with. 10 to certain powers, yeah.
In one place, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains that those millions refer to millions lifetimes of Brahma.
Millions of lifetimes of Brahma. Okay. Yeah, because everybody else doesn't really make... When you're looking at the universe from outside the universe, everybody else doesn't matter much, right? Because it's just 100 years of Brahma. So, okay. Millions of lifetimes of Brahma. Okay. So then... Krishna is overlooking that and himself personally coming and saying that for those few lifetimes that he's given up the material endeavor and is sacrificing everything to serve Krishna, Krishna's overlooking those millions of lifetimes of Brahma where one wasn't doing that. But being so impressed with a few lifetimes of surrender. Right? So, in here you see is even these things are discussed, but they're in relationship to one, they're in connection to one's relationship with Krishna. Right? That's what was different from what we were discussing the other day of feeling remorseful. Doesn't mean that we think, oh, I'm so, you know, useless, I'm so disgusting, I'm so this, I'm so that. You're just discussing an identity. Here he doesn't say, I am, he's saying, I have done. I'm servant of Krishna. But in this other is, no, I as an identity am sinful. I in his identity is wicked. I in his identity is loka. But Krishna's not part of the relationship here. It's just basically being pious. You understand? There's a difference here. So you see how it's being presented here is consistent, as we see in the prayers of the Acharyas, the songs of the Acharyas. It's always in connection to one's relationship with Krishna, personal relationship, meaning that I'm a person, he's a person. And so therefore, I as a person am admitting my fault to him as a person, you know, in that the relationship hasn't been going so great. Right? And not that Krishna is not making the endeavor. That's his point here. So, and still you say, I am indebted to you. He says, I didn't do anything compared to you. You know, you've created the whole world. You've tolerated this. You've come in the heart, you know, stood by all this. And now you're saying, I'm indebted to you. Right? Of late, I have deeply realized the gravity of my offenses. Right? The gravity meaning not that this offense is so bad. You know what I'm saying? That's not what we're talking. The gravity of offenses means that one is not recognizing the relationship with the Lord. You know what I'm saying? Everything's so wonderful. Right? Here. I have foolishly compared the Supreme Lord's beautiful form and complexion to the billowing monsoon clouds, or to a blushing bluish lotus flower, or even to a sparkling blue sapphire, right? And these are when we're being really nice and poetic and really pious, you know, kind of mentality, very sattvic, and then we're going through all these kinds of things like that. And he's saying, I'm foolish because of this. So I'm just taking is how much beauty is there in these? That's, you know, that's Krishna, and comparing his beauty to that. You know, one on the Brahman platform is just it's there. That's what's so beautiful about it, right? Or comparing that, you know, to his actual personal beauty in the poetic sense rather than the philosophical sense. And so he's saying it doesn't match, right? I have drawn poetic parallels between the exquisite face and the rising full moon, or the splendor of his delicate feet and the tender leaves of spring. These analogies are as amiss as when a scorched mustard seed is compared to a mountain of glittering gold. Right? So it's not even a regular mustard seed, scorched, because it won't grow. It won't get, what can you do with a scorched mustard seed, right? You know, of course, you know, an eight-year-old can put it in a pea shooter or something like that.
Scorched is more resembles gold, probably in color.
No, they just go darker black. Scorched just means it won't even... mustard seed has some value, it'll grow some mustard, but this is scorched, it won't even grow any mustard. Mustard seed is considered, is the typical smallest thing that you take, you know. You know, I mean, of course you have a grain of dust, but it's something, you don't work with dust. Mustard seeds is like the smallest you work with. You know, because even at the spices, the fine mustard seeds is basically the smallest one you'll deal with, like that. And so then, that's that, and it won't even grow. You know what I'm saying? In South, they'll use sesame seeds a lot. So sometimes you see sesame seeds used. But generally, it's mustard seed or sesame seed. An ordinary chickpea to an invaluable touchstone gem. A lowly sly fox to the regal lion. And a miserable mosquito to the awe-inspiring Garuda. I sincerely regret having committed these gross blunders. These were the times when I thought that my glorifications of the Lord were indeed poetic. But in fact, I shamelessly paraded my... Here's a good one.
Puerile.
My puerile learning for all to see. And puerile would be...
Immature.
Oh, okay.
Immature.
So the other is he's talking about, okay, now the material offenses, just the being, forgetting Krishna and acting as an idiot, right? And then now he's talking about even when my poetic renditions of the Lord, they don't compare. Remember, this is now he's seeing Krishna. Right? So an analogy is there to give you an idea. Right? So now he's saying is Krishna, his actual position and this example just don't compare. So he's so much more. But you know, around here, what are you going to do for example? Because in presenting something, you have to give an example, you know, something to that you can relate to, right? Otherwise, how do you have a relationship with it? So he's feeling bad about that. He's so much better than, you know, what is being presented. So the Shastras can only say so much. That's what, you know, the Acharyas made before. You know, what can words say? So what they mean is that this is as far as words go, and that's it. Beyond that, then it's only, you know, experience. All that is past. From now onward, when my eyes behold, even for a moment, the Lord's sublime loveliness, my words, like an untethered and restless calf, will not distort the truth in a futile attempt to describe his pristine beauty. Right? So now he's moved on. This is important. You know, this thing that, no, you have to be remorseful for time immemorial, and then when someone else finds out about your position, then you have to be remorseful again for their satisfaction. You know, hey, that was 20 years ago. No, but I only found out today. I want to see some remorse. You know, so it's like, you know, hey, you know, give us a break. So Manu mentions that a Brahmin doesn't berate himself over failures, right? He sees him as a failure. He sees what's wrong, and he vows to correct it. It's dynamic, because you with knowledge see the position, see the reality, and have a plan how you're going to do about it. If you just sit there and wallow in it, that is for Shudras. Right? It means as a mentality. You know, everybody has a bad day, but, you know, you understand? But that's what Shudras do. Shudra means one who laments. So they're always lamenting. So Brahman doesn't do that. One can say, well, he's not remorseful. No. How long does remorse take? If it's understood with proper understanding and knowledge, you know, in relationship to the Lord's instructions, then it's quite quick. Right? Then it's a matter of like that. But one will see, because it's based on knowledge, then there'll be humility. Right? Because he feels, you know, I am fallen. That you're in the material world, that's fallen enough. Right? You know? And these other things are just, you know, little additional side. These words of endless remorse and lamentation flow freely from the devotee. This pleases the Lord immensely, right? So this is what's meant by remorse. All of it's in connection with the Lord. But it's that I am sinful and, you know, all these different things that are based simply in connection with ethics and morality. You know, or at best, dharma. Right? But then yeah. So that's not what's attractive to the Lord. It means it has to be in connection with Him. You know what I'm saying? Cooking is a nice thing, but if you don't do it in connection with the Lord, it's not going to please the Lord. So remorse and lamentation, not connected to the Lord, how is it going to please the Lord? It doesn't stand on its own as a good thing. Because if it does, that means piety stands on its own. Sin stands on its own. So what we're saying is illusion has substance when it doesn't. Krishna is substance. And the lamentation is, I've absorbed myself so much in illusion and been distracted by pious and impious deeds and results that I've completely forgotten the Lord. Right? That's the remorse. Does that make sense? The Lord reciprocates with the prayasi mood, the mood of a stricken beloved for her lover, which these elevated devotees exhibit. He fulfills their yearnings and immediately manifests Vrindavan, the land immortalized for staging his transcendental pastimes. There a devotee sees Krishna with his most beloved gopi, Srimati Radharani, daughter of King Vrishabhanu. This Mahayoga peak is like the wish-fulfilling tree. The divine couple is surrounded by Lalita Devi and other girlfriends and maidservants of Radharani. Right, so this is the other side of that, what we were discussing before. You know, just the situation of the Lord, his energies and the lotus. That's the, you know, by tattva, that's the positions. But this is now the pastimes. Krishna's friend, Subal, and others are also present. Those gopis who consider themselves the divine couple's maids in attendance and who are completely dependent on the Lord for everything are gathered around them. Right, so those gopis who consider themselves the divine couple's maids in attendance. Because it's an attitude, right? It's not a position. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. That's the point. The devotee can see the river Jamuna, Govardhan Hill, Bandiravan, and can see also Nandishvar Giri, where Krishna's father and mother, Nanda Maharaj and Jashoda Devi, are. The devotee sees Krishna's brother, Baladev, and his friends, and Nanda's household servants and maidservants, as well as all the residents of Vrindavan. After, right, because now these here, it says maidservants, household, because they are servants in the house, right? So they're maidservants, like this. But the those who consider themselves the maids in attendance, they're just other married women in the community of Braja, right? So socially, they don't have the standing of a maidservant. So it's their mentality that they've taken on this. This is how they view themselves as Radharani's maidservants, right? And are completely dependent. Right? Does that make sense? That's the difference. So socially they're not. This one here, then they are. That's socially their position. They're maidservants in Nanda Baba's palace. And I think that's headed by she's mentioned the Bogartik song. She takes the remnants and sneaks them off. Danishta. She's the head of that. As well as all the residents of Vrindavan. After revealing to the devotee scenes drenched with super excellent divine mellows, immersing him in waves of incomparable bliss, Krishna suddenly disappears along with all his associates. Jai. Right? Thereafter, the devotee becomes more or less aware of himself and his immediate surroundings, whatever they were. Oh no, back in the Brahma. God. Yeah. You know, back in the East End in front of Abdullah's falafels, right? Oh no. His eyes flutter open, and finding that his beloved Lord is nowhere to be seen, he begins to pine for him. Unrestrained tears pour down his cheeks in streams. He ponders, was I in a dream? No, if it were so, I would be still drowsy and my eyes would be sticky from sleep. Then, was it all created by someone's mystic powers? That is also not plausible, because the bliss I experienced is not an illusion or something mundane, right? Because he's already experienced that. The devotee means he's done everything there is to do in the material world, so whatever it is, and one's not satisfied. One has come to the point, one knows there's nothing of value here, right? And one's liberated, so one can tell the difference here, right? Maybe it was a hallucination, an error of the mind. That is also not true. Otherwise, I would feel restless and my heart empty. Right? Because then it wouldn't have any substance. Could it be all a fabrication of a fertile imagination? No, this experience is beyond the capacity of any imagination. Because you can only imagine things that you have experience of. Right? You can make a gold mountain because you've seen gold in a mountain. But if you haven't seen gold or a mountain, you can't create a gold mountain. Right? Speculation means you speculate on what is known. Right? Does that make sense? You create the unknown from what is known. The other possibility is that the Lord's vision may suddenly appear in the mind's eye because of extreme happiness. This is also ruled out because on every previous occasion when I saw the Lord, I can remember what they were like. But my present experience is far more unique than those. Right? So he's going through all the what it could be. You know, what could create that on the material platform? And it's not any of those. It's not even just his regular service in meditation. It's not any of that. Because all that he can remember. He says this is different. Or the bereft devotee thinks, Krishna is so merciful that he awarded me his direct audience, although I am an insignificant speck floating in an ocean of bad qualities. This is because his mercy is causeless, hence he appeared to me. It is because of some unimaginable good fortune that the boundless ocean was for a few moments in the palm of my hand. Shouldn't it be is it? Instead of it is, because it ends in a question. But alas, my terrible faults have made this ocean disappear. My ignorance prevents me from discovering what actually happened. The whole experience has dumbfounded me and turned me into a fool. Where can I go? What shall I do? To whom shall I turn to for answers? I feel the world empty and void, absent of any companions, friends, or dear ones. A planet without a sanctuary. Right? Kind of like the Little Prince. You don't know? Okay. It's a storybook. Really, it didn't make it to Australia. Okay. Storybook, but you have this planet, and then this kid that's like, you know, half the size of the planet standing on it, you know, but there's nothing on it. a planet without a sanctuary, a world aflame in a raging forest fire eager to devour me. Under these circumstances, let me go to a secluded place away from crowds so I can meditate on this subject for some time. In this way, the devotee laments, sighing and sometimes rolling in the dust. At times, he collapses in an ecstatic state of unconsciousness or suddenly runs hither and thither like a madman. He sees Krishna in every direction and exuberantly laughs, sings, and dances simultaneously. But in the very next moment, he breaks down and cries hot tears of remorse. The devotee can thus pass the rest of his life in pursuit of such transcendental symptoms of ecstasy, but never more does he pamper his body. In other words, he is unconcerned about his physical well-being, feeling unnecessary to inquire into its needs. After the demise of his body, the devotee attains the eternal spiritual form, Siddhadeha, and engages in the Lord's service. Factually, the devotee understands he has reached that Siddhadeha stage when he becomes oblivious to his body. He thus thinks, "The Supreme Lord, who is an ocean of compassion, has appeared on my plea, and he will personally engage me in his direct service and take me to his eternal abode." With this understanding, the devotee feels crowned with success. So what is described up to here, this has happened within one's material form. Right? So that means that bhava and then coming up to that platform then is happening through meditation. Right? And then here the Lord directly comes. Yes.
So when this devotee becomes completely oblivious to his body, what happens actually to the body? Does it just like kind of walk around and perform its material duties on its own, or does it collapse, or
it suddenly runs hither and thither?
Oh yeah.
And it suddenly at last dances and sings.
But that
sometimes it rolls in the dust.
That just keeps on going.
Is that a problem?
No. I've never seen it. But
I'll be a little more aware. Check it out. It's explained as like, let us say you have a small baby, right? It's big enough to walk around. Is it in any way concerned about taking a bath or eating or bathing or anything? I mean, you know, other things, sleeping. No. But does all that happen? Yeah. I mean, it's trying to walk off someplace, but simultaneously the mother is dressing it, you know. Or it's doing something else and it's getting fed, you know, that. You understand? So that's it. Those functions go on. The modes of nature take care of it. Right? You know, because it's part of the material energy. So she's the mother, so she takes care of it. Right? As long as you're trying to take care, okay, then you do it yourself. You know, the kid, no, I'm going to dress myself. Okay, you do it, you know. Like that, and it works out good or bad depending how much, you know, skill you have, you know. Yes.
Those symptoms seem to be very elevated.
Very.
Too elevated.
So you want to know what's one elevated instead of two elevated, or is there a three elevated? You know? Yes. How shall we? Basically, nobody. This is only saying what happens. We saw before already at Bhava, the family members think he's nuts. So now they're totally convinced.
He's given up.
Yeah, they've given up. Because it says he spends, and the devotee can thus spend the rest, pass the rest of his life. You know, like that. So it's just. I think when you get to that platform, you really don't care. You know? Does that work? Or?
Should we be checking out mental institutions for people in prayer?
Should we be checking out? Oh, no, we should open our own, right? In-house. No. No, it's the point is, but this is, as a preacher, then one doesn't manifest this. It doesn't mean this is not this position, but one doesn't manifest it.
So that's the going down in order to communicate.
Well, it's not so much down, it's just taking a particular perspective.
Okay.
This is the natural perspective, you know, for their position, but to preach, then they'll take on the perspective of, you know, identifying the different elements of this world. In this position, they don't make any distinction here. It doesn't really matter.
Or would that be something like a pujari who may have his feeling inside a lot of ecstasy because he's doing the puja, so...
Yeah, like that. Why not? Yes?
This is something related to Narada Muni when he... When he leaves home and he goes to the forest.
Yeah, yeah. It means after he hears, then he spends the rest of the time like that. So it's a standard procedure. Is that, see, is one is always here to that, and one gets so much taste, but then when he comes to that position, that Krishna is, you know, fully reveals himself and then disappears. And then that just creates so much more desire that it just create that it drives one to come to that, you know, the platform of prema. Right? Does that sound like that? Right? Because now in these other things, it's been describing how one identifies the different levels and what to do. Right? So in here, it's identifying the various levels and what to do. Does that make sense? So it's different from something that's just describing the pastimes. Right? So Siddhadeha means... Through the meditation is full, so he's always there, he's on that platform, because then you're always absorbed in Krishna, right? Because otherwise, you will come to the platform, you have the spiritual form, but then you'll leave it and come back here, right? So here, basically, they don't leave it, they just stay there. You know, they're on that platform, but, you know. The scriptures list as follows the different stages of elevation that lead to prema. 1. Shraddha, faith in the words of the guru in the scriptures, right? So even there he started off with guru and knowledge. 2. Sadhusanga, the urge to associate with saintly souls to gain spiritual knowledge. Right? So it's not just hanging around, but you want to associate, the need to. Bhajana Kriya, rendering devotional service under the guidance of the guru. Anartha Nivritti, the removal of unwanted desires in the heart. Nishta, steadiness in devotional service, or using superior intelligence to develop a taste for devotional service. Right? So it's not just to be steady, but to develop a taste. Right? Dynamic. Asakti, single-minded attachment to devotional service, performed by meditating on Lord Krishna's eternal pastime.
Mukti?
These eternal pastimes appear in the devotee's heart simultaneously by their own will. Svarasvaki bhav. Right? So it's before that you have to think about it and meditate. Here it's just on its own coming.
Ruchi? Is that part of the sakti or nishtha?
It says, or using superior intelligence to develop a taste for devotional service.
This seems to be a little bit like reduced.
A little bit reduced.
Yeah, here, yes,
here it says Ruchi.
And in the next one, like those levels of prema, it's like also instead of 10, there is only 6.
Where?
Yeah, the next one has only 6 points.
Because in other words, these others are just, you know, next to the other thing. You know, like you have east next to east, south next to south, west next to west. So it's just so here what you're seeing is that Shraddha is you having faith. Sadhusanga, then you the urge to take up that association. Then you perform the devotional service under the guru. Then you remove anarthas, then you become fixed. But that fixed naturally then results in taste. So there's not so much difference there. Then asakti, now that's something different in that you're totally attached and the pastimes are just appearing on their own. Right? Before that you have to, you know, make the endeavor to think about them. Now they just happen on their own. Right? Bhava, serving the Lord with spontaneous devotional sentiments. And prema, awakening love of God. So footnote 4. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes in Sri Bhajana Rahasya. In the 16-word Hare Krishna mantra, there are 8 pairs of names. corresponding to these eight pairs, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has recited the eight shlokas of the Shikshastakam. The first pair of names. So this is just another insight into the connection. So these names connect to the prayer that's being said in the Shikshastakam, right? And this will be the essential point that's being given. So in other words, the essence of the Shikshastaka, you know, what's being said, you know, in poetic form there, and then is here. The first pair of names, Hare Krishna, signifies the subduer of ignorance and the performer of Nam Sankirtan with faith. The second pair, Hare Krishna, means Krishna's names are invested with all potencies. One should have attachment for bhajan by taking shelter of the holy name in the association of sadhus. Gradually, by performing bhajan, anarthas, unwanted contaminations, are destroyed. As anarthas are removed, nishtha, firm faith, develops. The third part, Krishna Krishna, indicates the company of pure devotees and becoming fixed in firm faith throughout the day and night. By the fourth pair, Hare Hare, unmotivated devotion is awakened along with the taste for Nam Sankirtan. So then, yeah, the first we're doing is that awakening. Right? Then the potencies means that in the association of devotees, taking up that process, then all anarthas will be removed. Right? So it's taking the first one is that Shraddha. Right, then sadhu sangha, bhajana kriya, narta, nivriti are put together in the second prayer of the Shikshastaka. Right? Then the third one is dealing with nishta. And then the fourth is ruchi. The fifth pair, Hare Rama, represents the taste for pure devotional service along with the remembrance of the holy names as prescribed in Shikshastaka. In the sixth pair, Hare Rama, chanting the beginning stage of transcendental emotion leads to material detachment and complete attachment to Krishna. The seventh pair, Rama Rama, awakens attachment for the mellow of conjugal Ras, the shelter of Radha's lotus feet, and feelings of separation. The eighth pair, Hare Hare, leads to attainment of the goal of life-loving service to Radha and Krishna, following in the mood of the gopis of Vrindavan throughout the eight divisions of the day and night, Astakam. Right? So here we see is here also unmotivated service awakened along with a taste. So that seems to be that third and fourth are describing ruchi, but it's also that element is connection with nishta. Right? Because then the next one is that taste for it along with the remembrance. Right? And then complete attachment. But here it also could mean that the complete attachment is no. Yeah, then bhava and then prema. But it also can be taken that the last one, in another place will describe that the last one is mahabhava. And then before that is prema, before that then is bhava. So then in that way, is because there's these overlaps, you can also define it by the first element. You know what I'm saying? So then prema ends with the seventh, and mahabhava is the eighth. Or, as he's doing here, that prema is the eighth, you know, the seventh is bhava, then the sixth, like this. Does that make sense? So the connections between them are quite close. Beyond these eight levels, so it's taken eight levels, right? So, but to make it clear between nishta and ruchi, then that's been put in there. So we can take it that ruchi is an aspect of nishta. Right? But at the same time, in another place, he was connecting ruchi and asakti together. Yeah. You know, yeah. So therefore, you know, it's in one of those. So all of these are like that. Depending on what you're expressing, then that'll take on that. Beyond these eight levels, the scriptures describe with precision further stages of advancement in the realm of spiritual realization. If a tree represents bhakti or true devotional service, these loftily devotional exchanges with the Lord can be described as the mature fruits that ripen on the upper branches of the tree of bhakti. These devotional exchanges are defined as follows. Sneha, when the heart melts with excessive love. Mana, extreme sneha that uncovers new delightful regions of loving exchanges, making the beloved externally behave in a capricious way. Right, okay. So just that melting of love. But then when that melting of love then creates, you know, it's extreme melting of love, then it creates dealing in, you know, I say, ways that are very moody and all that. They may not appear to be, let's see, there's a word that they always use. Starts with a C, meaning that you act in a way that externally appears to be not favorable.
Contrary.
Right? So an art acts in a contrary fashion. It means, in other words, it's so great that you basically do the opposite. You know what I'm saying? When it's just a little, it's just direct. When it's more, then you do the opposite. You know what I'm saying? When there's a little bit of attraction, when you see the person, you look at them. Right? When there's more attraction, when they look, you look away. Yeah, you understand? So it just does the opposite. Pranaya, a type of man that induces the beloved to feel on equal terms with the lover, thus bringing about quarrels of love between them. So the one is just act in kind of different, but now it's like directly. Raga, afflicting, conflicting emotions in the beloved, sometimes of unbearable lamentation and sometimes of extreme happiness, while waiting expectantly to meet her lover, Krishna. Right? The two go together. Right? Like that, he does this and this and that, but then if he doesn't come, then no, but then it just goes, it's all over the place.
What is the meaning of mana?
Mana. Generally, it's meant as kind of a contrary mood. A mood that is based on, it's based on anger, but it appears that it's not manifest to the point of creating a quarrel. You know? Like somebody does something you don't like and you just kind of go quiet and do whatever you're doing and may not interact, or you may say something sarcastic, or but you're not creating an argument. Right? So that would be there. And then pranaya would be where you actually then see it as an equal term, so there you start a fight like that. So that means it's greater like that. Anurag, love that makes the beloved experience her old lover as if meeting him for the very first time. Right? So it's, you know, that ever freshness of Krishna. It's, see, up to this point is you're meeting the same person. You know, it means the same. Means not necessarily the same person, but meaning the same manifestation of qualities, right? And so, therefore, you can relate to past, you know, elements of being upset or angry, or you know, refer to other. In other words, it'll be a continuation of previous emotional interactions. But this anuraga, it's as if it's a completely new person. So when Radha and Krishna first see each other, it's as if they've never seen each other before, right? Because Krishna is unlimitedly expanding, right? No? So that means every moment there's more and more specialness. And he's non-different from his energy. So what does that mean? What's the energy doing? Expanding also, just the same, exact. So there's a perfect, it's perfectly compatible. So that means for each one of them, it's as if they've never seen before, because there's so much more, right? And because, you know, they are who they are, that can go on unlimitedly, you know, for eternity. So one doesn't have to worry it's going to run out, right? So. Would that bring a lot of? Innocent meaning? Yes, because the point is, if it's new and fresh, then you're kind of having to start from how to interact. And because the point is it's the getting to that point that's interesting. It's not the, what do you call it? There's a saying. about the chase, not the, you know? No, it's a different one.
It's fun to chase a rabbit.
The pleasure being in the chase.
Yeah, I guess each country has its own thing, but I can't remember the American one. But, you know, it's like that. It's like on the hunt, it's the chase and the possibility of catching, not once you've caught. Once you've caught the animals, then you have, now what? You know, so it's the chase. So it's that, but here Krishna wants catching is also very special, but it's, the point is that element, that newness, and then trying to work out how to interact and all that. Does that make sense? That's, you know, that special and new. That freshness, right? Mahabhav, the highest expression of love with all its diversity and complexity. This is not found in any of the other loving exchanges. Okay. So in a footnote, it takes up more than half the page. I hope no one minds this style of documentation. I was always impressed in the Brahma Samhita by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. There's one page where there's one line at the top and the rest of it's all footnotes. And I think that's continuing from the page before, like that. You know, so I was always impressed by, wow, okay. Because you'll read it. If this was at the end of the book, the tendencies won't read it. So in important points, I prefer that they're footnotes rather than endnotes. So.
Whole leg note.
Half a torso note. So, you know. Just on here, saying there's six, but then what about prema and bhava? Okay. So then you have at least there eight, right? And so that means then the other two are subdivisions in, within this. You know, just like the ruchi, you can be thrown in with nishtara sakti. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes in his commentary in Shloka 7 of Sri Shikshastaka, Shantaras, or neutral love of Godhead, is marked by excessive exaltation. Attachment to Brahman is quintessential in Shantaras, coupled with an air of disregard and unconcern for everything and all other rasas. Right? So, means attachment to Brahman, so you're seeing that Brahman element, but you're seeing it in relationship to the person. So he's the one that creates all these different things and whatever's here. So from that, one doesn't have any regard or concern for any of the other rasas, because then you're not just appreciating the wonderfulness of how he's, you know, entered everything and how he is everything and that greatness and that specialness and all that. So neither on the spiritual platform are you interested in anything else, and neither on the material platform are you interested in anything, right? So they'll be, it's like they're situated on it's basically a personal Brahman realization. So this is actually, you could say, Brahman realization. It's just Shantaras, right? So Sukadeva Goswami said he's Shantaras, right? And they're saying he's Brahman realized. So it means this kind of Brahman realized. That's why when he runs around, he doesn't bump into trees. You know, because Krishna is that potency, the tree in his ground. So, you know, your locomotion, that's Krishna, you know, matches with, you know, the path, you know, that has that ability, that's Krishna, rather than the tree, that's Krishna. Does that make sense? Kind of. Left you somewhere. What doesn't make sense?
He doesn't bump into the tree, but.
Well, that's what's important, right?
But he's going naked.
And what's wrong with naked? So, means a 3-year-old kid walks around naked. Is there a problem? Is it going to hit the front page of the Huffington Post? Time magazine will come out on a cover article. So what is special about the 3-year-old?
Because all 3 years old kids, they go naked.
Yeah, but why do they go naked? Why don't they care?
They
not develop the sense of need to be.
Yeah, so if he doesn't have that sense of need, then it's the same thing. You understand? Because you're, what's happening here is you're on one side seeing in this that it's the mentality that makes the innocence. But on the other side, then you're looking at it that he's, you know, fully grown, so therefore there's the form. But with the general thing is, as the form develops, then the mentality changes. You understand? But in the case of someone who's Brahman realized, their mentality is never going to change. The body changes, that doesn't matter. So they're a youth, they think the same way. They're, you know, middle age, they're old age, it doesn't matter to them. Right? And you're upset. But the naked girls who are bathing, they weren't upset. Right? So if anybody could be upset, it would be them. And they're not worried about it. So why would you choose that one?
It seems to me that some rules they follow, but some not.
Is there a difference between walking down the road and not bumping into a tree and, you know, performing achma? Is there a difference in the classification of these rulings?
Yes.
So what's the difference? Okay, and the other?
Common sense,
right. So that's what we're pointing out. In common sense, you know, he has full common sense. Because he's on the Brahman platform, so he sees everything. But it's personal Brahman. So he sees it all in relationship to the Lord. But these other rules, what is sadhana for? To develop that platform. So if you already have the platform, do you need it?
No.
Like, it's just like this. Let's say you have a can, right? And so you need a can opener. Now, once the can is open, do you need a can opener?
Next time.
No, with this particular can.
No.
Okay, because once you become Brahman realized, there is no next time. Okay? So he doesn't need that sadhana. We need it, but he doesn't. Okay? But what we're trying to discuss here is the mentality that one sees everything. We're talking about a rasa here, where one sees that, appreciates that Brahman element. But it's part of Brahman. It's the person has pervaded and he's making everything special. Right? Does that make sense? That's the discussion. I only pointed that out is because there's the idea that the Mayavadis present that seeing it as all one means there is no tree. It's an illusion that there's a tree. So if they're moving around, it wouldn't matter because they're free from illusion. Then they could walk anywhere, and supposedly there are no trees, and they wouldn't have a body and they wouldn't be walking. So what we're pointing out is, it's not that they can't discriminate between varieties of Brahman. It's just that Brahman, the platform of Brahman, is their platform from which they appreciate the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. With the increasing of mamata, or affection, this attraction deepens and then is then known as dasyaras, or love in servitorship. Right? So when that sense of ownership is there, because on the Brahman it's just, there's no ownership. It's just your Brahman, he's the supreme and like this, and so you're just appreciating the tattva basically. But it's the person who is the source of that. So then the person will be appreciated. But it's not like the person's yours or you're theirs. You know, that's you know, not so much the consideration. Like that. In awe and reverential worship, there's a lack of pranay. But such pranay, ecstasy in a mature state, turns mischievous and introduces a crooked mood, which, due to a plethora of affection, is very unusual in texture. This is known as mana. The mood of mana becomes active when the devotee expresses loving resentment. Even the Supreme Lord desires to relish this particular emotional exchange, and especially enjoys the mood of reconciliation with his devotee that follows resentment. Right? So he enjoys that reconciliation. You understand? So this is the problem, right? He is the enjoyer. So there's no question of him not being. He is the Lord. So it's not a question of his trying to establish his authority. The person's got upset. How can you become a sub? Hey, I'm God. You know, you can't become a sub like me like that. You understand? Does this make some sense? The problem is the jiva is never God. And so as long as he thinks he is, he'll always have intense emotional disturbances due to this deepening of affection that creates this pranay and then this mana. Right? Does that make sense? But he enjoys working it out. The living entity hates working it out. Right? Does that make sense? I was told that someone was telling me like the culture, I don't know how far spread it is, but like in Sweden, if something goes wrong, nobody talks about it. And just with time, it just goes away. Nobody addresses it, no one tries to work it out, you just leave it. Someone says something stupid, someone did something stupid, you just leave it. Everyone will go on as if nothing happened, and eventually time will just work it out. Like that. And so the basic principle is no one likes to work these things out. And having worked it out, you think, now it's done eternally, now it's perfect. No. Perfection for Krishna is that it's constantly, this is happening. You understand? So that's why if you see yourself as servant and you're assisting the other person, then one can get through all these things unscarred. You know, we're not mentioning unscathed, but unscarred. Does this make sense? Right? So this idea is that, no, because, you know, I'm the husband, this is the way it is, and the wife shouldn't be like that. There's no such thing in the cosmic creation. There's no reality of that. It's an absolute, total illusion. Right? Before I talked about it strongly, but, you know, it doesn't make much sense to people, but here's the point. Krishna enjoys doing this. If he didn't enjoy it, why would it happen? And you want to be God, so there, enjoy. But you're not enjoying. Why? Because you're not God.
Seems simple.
Yeah, pretty simple. You know, but saying, no, but it should be like this, it should, no, it's not. That's your illusion.
Does this section speak about the
sakyaras? It's included in this when you say pranay. Pranay, because see in other sections, I don't know if we'll come across it, where he explains how far each rasa goes. Right? So basically Shanta rasa is on the platform of bhava. You know, I'm not sure if it gets to prema, but like that. But then Shakaras gets to prema, and then it will go some of them into pranay. You know, there'll be some little things. Because they can be chivalrous, they can make comments and, you know, harass like that, that element of equalness. But it doesn't become contrary like that. But in the conjugal rasa, it can become contrary. Or with Mother Jashoda, it can become contrary. You know, he's doing something. Hey, what is this? You think you're a street kid? Now, you know, get over here. You know, sit down. You know, it can go in that direction. You know? So is here, it starts off with this, but it leaves that, because we notice is that Rupa Goswami also, in some definitions, doesn't count Shanta Ras within the rasas, because it acts on its own platform, being connected with the Brahman understanding. Like that, or just the qualities of Krishna. In other words, the Brahman means Krishna's qualities, but there's a manifestation of it, but it's that he has the qualities that's important, rather than the exchange based on the qualities. You understand? So, so, So then after that, then it goes into, you know, you start servitorship. When that deepens, then you get all these others. So sometimes he also just defines only friendship, parental and conjugal. Because the first two are, you know, very standard, but the other ones have all these flavors in it that don't go. So it'll go a little farther. Does that make sense? The parental go even more far. Only conjugal gets up to Mahabhav. But it's not that every gopi's in Mahabhav. Right? Specifically, it's Radharani in her camp. That's Mahabhav. They'll experience that. Because they're connected to her. She experiences it. You're not connected to her, why you'll feel it. But what's just below it, then that they'll experience. Right? Does that make sense? So like that, then there's the just like before, is how far something goes through, then how far is the same there. So by switching to expressing it in this way, it also then deals with this. But this is general mood. Right? The mood, when the devotee expresses love, man becomes active when the devotee expresses loving resentment. It's active. It can be non-active, means you feel that, but you haven't expressed it. Right? And then the pranaya is that element where you're willing to fight about it. You know, right? So that loving resentment can be from any of these levels, right? Intimate cowherd boy, you know, the boy cowherd boy friends, the parental ras, and the conjugal ras. So you can see that there. So it's generic here, right? Even the Lord desires to relish this particular emotional exchange and especially enjoys the mood of reconciliation with his devotee that follows resentment. Like, we don't like it because it's trouble. You know? And so, if it's trouble, it's getting in the way of our enjoyment, you know, in passion and ignorance. And if it's in goodness, we don't like trouble either. So therefore, only on the platform of pure goodness can you appreciate, you know, these elements of rasa. So, that would mean only the pure devotees actually can survive being grihasthas. Because they see it in relation to Krishna. Therefore, it mentions in Krishna books the young gopi, I mean, I forget where it was. Or it's in Bhagavatam, that they're praying that they marry pure devotees. Because they're the only ones that will deal with them properly. And everyone else has issues. Right? Does that make sense? So what we say is that only by understanding the devotional process and advancing, that will make all these things work better. That's the point. Otherwise, someone could be very pious, and it'll work up to a point, but devotion is still beyond that. You know what I'm saying? So you can follow the things, but not connect to the Lord. So you can mechanically do that, but that will only work for someone who is pious enough. Right? So there's no use expressing the activities of piety to those from a stock that is not famous, or let's say it's infamous for its lack of Vedic piety. You know what I'm saying? So the devotional is the thing that can go beyond. So by following that, all the qualities necessary. The important thing is that relationship with Krishna, but because of our attachment to the material phenomena, then it's only still through devotional service that will be taken care of. Now, if you make that primary, then that's a distraction in devotional service. But as secondary, it will be taken care of. Right? You don't worry about it. It means you follow the process and follow the culture as a side thing, all your material relationships will work. But if you try to make the material relationships work, then it won't work so good. It can only work on the level of piety. A pious person can be conscious of directly the pious activity, but you have to be pious. That's why Varnashram is not a process in this age. It's something that assists the process. You understand? In other ages, through Varnashram, you could follow the duties and see that in relationship with the Lord because of their piety and elevate themselves. But in this age, one doesn't have the piety to elevate oneself, so only through devotional service is there enough piety to actually practice it. Right? Because those qualities are automatically, how do you say? Qualities of devotion gained by devotional service. Right? Because it says knowledge and detachment. Right? And in Gita, what is it? 13.8 or something? It lists 20 qualities of knowledge. right? So humility, all these different things. That's knowledge. Right? So nescience means one doesn't have that. So those 18 qualities that were listed before, you know. So nescience is those 18, and knowledge is what the 20 given in Gita. Right? So, yes.
In the 12th chapter of Gita, when Krishna is teaching the different processes of surrender, starting from that level, constant meditation, it goes down until. So I was looking at that, and there was a doubt. So Vanashram would be the stand.
Would be the?
The stand, right? The beginning of the process. And if you.
You're talking top down or bottom up?
Bottom up. Below Vanashram could have not fallen the Vedas, the modern, right?
No, it's not given as an option. If you can't be pious, then be a Mayavadi. At least they have some sadhana. Being a Malechian Yavana doesn't somehow or another make it to the list.
It's outside the system.
Because that's practices for a human. Okay. If you're not practicing Varnashram, you're technically not human. That's the advantage of devotional service. Any species can practice it. You know what I'm saying? Because if we were limited to you had to be on the human platform to elevate yourself, then, you know, what chance would we have? You know what I'm saying? We can say, oh no, but he's very pious, yeah. But is a deer a nice animal? Right? You know, swans, they mate for life. You know, is that not, you know, ants and bees work, you know, selflessly for the community's benefit. You know, yeah. You can't, it means, think of the management in a beehive or a termite hive. You're talking about tens of thousands, and sometimes I think in termites even millions, hundreds of thousands at least. Big management, and there's one authority. You know, so I mean, you could say is that there's all these good qualities that are there, but they're still animals. So to have the good qualities doesn't mean that you're not an animal. It's just you're a nice animal. You know, so a nice animal is nicer than a not nice animal. You know, you'd rather meet, you know, a deer than, you know, a rabid dog, you know, or something, or a wolf, you know, who's, you know, your dinner no matter how you look at it, you know. So it's does that make sense?
Okay.
So he's taking there as if you can just immediately understand and surrender. That's the best. If you can't, then follow the process of practice. That you're engaged always in the Lord's service by sadhana, so that's Pancharatra. If you can't do that, then you take up, you know, your Vedic process by following the Varnashram, but do it as Naishkarmya, you know, from the Madhyama platform. Right? So, in other words, you're acting as the Uttamadhikari, that's the first option. If not, then as a Madhyam practicing Pancharatra, if not as a Madhyam practicing Varnashram. Right? If you can't do that, then Sakam and give the results to him. Then you drop down into the neophyte. Right? If you can't do that, then you'd be a pious person, open hospitals, this and that, because a pious person becomes a devotee. So if you're pious and all that, you're giving in charity, you're doing all, you might give in charity to devotees, or you might, that, you know, come in contact, or because you're interested in piety, you have that sense of good feeling, but then there's so much bad in the world. So that will disturb you, so you may inquire. You know what I'm saying? So that's there. And if you can't do that, then, because that's dynamic, then at least if one's an impersonalist, one's following some Vedic sadhana, one's not concerned with this world. At least you're not performing pious activities, but you're not performing sinful. You're kind of neutral. Right?
Cultivation of knowledge, right?
Yeah, through cultivation of knowledge. You know, okay, that's better, but they'll have more problems than the pious person. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So each one will have less problem in surrendering. But immediately, having said that, then he says, better than that is activity, better than, you know, is
meditation is better than that, and then renunciation of fruit is better than.
Yeah, so then immediately brings it back to Naishkarmya.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so better than, so it immediately just jumps back up. So it's not very recommended, but you can't see from that platform one could surrender. Prakashananda Saraswati and the sannyasis of Varanasi, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, these are your, you know, essential examples. What is that word? Quintessential examples of the jnani then surrendering like that. But you see, you have to go through a lot of endeavor and a lot of knowledge to get them to surrender. And, you know, you'd have to be, and they were real jnanis, so they were looking for the absolute, so they would. Someone who's a pseudo jnani, it's just an excuse for thinking whatever they want to think. They don't want to be regulated in their thinking. So you might find it'll be difficult. So that's referring to an actual jnani. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, a person who doesn't follow any, you know, you'd say sensual piety, or someone who doesn't follow any intellectual piety, that's not even within the list. Does that make sense?
I was trying to match the level of consciousness with this example of Krishna, from Anamoy to Anandamoy.
It can, but the problem comes is, well, yeah, you could, but then you're going to have to understand is your Vijnanamoy, where you don't actually understand the Lord that is on the bottom. So we can understand this is that technically you'd have to look at it. Another thing is that from the levels of perception. And the impersonalists never get past, the Mayavadis never get past the second stage of just hearing from others. They've heard from others about the Brahman, but they've never experienced it. You know what I'm saying? So they're not actually on that fourth level that's in Hokshija, where they're seeing how the Lord's descended, because they're Mayavadis. They don't accept. You know what I'm saying? You know, Brahmavadi is a different thing. When we refer to Brahmavadi, we generally mean someone who's realized that. But a jnani is someone who's in the process of, through knowledge, trying to elevate themselves. Like that. Does that make sense? So then you'd be dealing with someone who is able to, you know, function, where he's seeing the deity and all. It's a formalized Anandamoy. Right? And then it comes down into the Vijnanamoy. Because he's following the rules and regulations, but not for his own purposes. Right? He's using Dharma, but for Vijnanamoy, right? Then you come down and you're following Dharma for yourself, so then that's there. And then that, even without the consciousness of God consciousness. So he doesn't drop below Manamoy, right? Because below that, it has to connect up. The Lord will descend into Adhoksita, into Vijnanamoy. As you understand, it's the Brahman level connected with him. He'll descend into that. And if you see the rules and regulations of the scriptures in connection with him, he can even go into that. But artha and kama, that you have to connect to Dharma to connect it to the Lord. The superabundance of love that completely melts the heart to a state of unimaginable liquidity is known as sneha. So this is not necessarily in order then. Or he's just explaining the different things, aspects. Unimaginable liquidity is known as sneha, which is indicated by profuse, unchecked tears. It is in this stage that the devotee's yearning to see Krishna never admits fulfillment. Although Krishna is admittedly the master of everyone and everything, in vatsalya rasa, or parental love, the devotee anxiously hopes that no harm befall him. These are the particular symptoms of the mellow of parental love. Okay, so this brings out there that sneha, that's just, you know, that such great affection, right? So that's the same thing that will be reflected here, right? That is that this that natural just love that the parent has for the child, right? Sneha supplemented by intense craving becomes raga. Right? So it's just showing what, you know, how one transforms into the next. And in this stage of pure love, even a moment's separation from the beloved is unbearable. While in union, even extreme grief feels exhilarating. Right? So that's the point, is that it may be a problem, but if you're together, then it's great. You know what I'm saying? So it's there.
This Raj, is that when Prabhu says Raj Aduga, who is following those who have this, so it just means primary union?
No, I think it basically means rag. It just means attachment. I think it's a generic term meaning that one has the attachment. That's why it says one follows in the mood of the devotee. So that mood is the rag, the particular mood that they have for serving Krishna. So you're following in their footsteps. So it's rag anuga. What was the question?
Is rag anuga meaning following in this rag?
Yeah, but it could also mean rag, meaning like by rag, or imon rag, you know, the evening rag, the morning rag, or so the. It's just, from what I understand, it just means there's a mood that they have. Just like the residents of Vrindavan, there's a mood. Someone's following the footsteps of that mood. Or the residents of Dwarka have a mood. So there's that. Then they're specific within that. Then a category of, you know, a group of devotees within that. They're specific within that. So I would say it's not meaning this level of that. It's meaning because you can follow in the footsteps of somebody, let's say, who's, you know, the cowherd, so they may not have the sneha, because it's specifically the ornament of the parental rasa. It doesn't mean that what's higher doesn't have that, it's just that, you know what I'm saying? Raga is disposed in such a manner that the object of worship is made to appreciate his own ever-fresh perennial form. Okay, so now, so one is appreciating that, I used to know, that separation. So when there's union, then that exchange would be such that Krishna would be able to appreciate his own ever freshness, because that would be, you know, part of the exchange. And the other one is mutual. We saw before it causes the, isn't that? That's the anuraga. So unless he's giving anuraga next. This ever new raga transforms itself into agara, anuraga, where the sense of lover and beloved enrapturing each other in the state of complete compliance increases. Right. The other one, then, this like one is dealing in that way, and the other was appreciating. This is now where both of them deal in that way. Right. So it takes on another flavor. In the rapture of anuraga, there are longings to be born as animals and other lower species that have a direct connection with Krishna. Right, so then they're happy to be, you know, like that, the blade of grass, or, you know, the gopis are sitting there, and he's there with the cows, and he can pet the cows and be with the cows and everything, so they'd like to be a cow so they could always be with Krishna, right? Because as a gopi, they have to stay away, right? Because it's socially not cool, but they're cowherds, so therefore if you're with the cows, it's cool, right? You know? Like that. This is known as prema vaichitya, or varied love. Even in separation, okay, so in anuraga you get this prema vaichitya. That's a conflicting mix of all kinds of flavors, but it all harmonizes together perfectly because of its connection to Krishna. Even in separation, Krishna begins to manifest himself as only the lover knows and loves him, giving the lover excessive bliss. So the separation that Krishna is manifest, but not directly, but the, you know, how do you say? It's really hard. Means from our platform, meaning he's not physically present, but the meditation of the devotee on Krishna, Krishna enters that meditation and increases that. You know, and it reciprocates with the meditation. Because the others, you're meditating and you're, you know, but here he's reciprocating with the meditation. Right? So it's not on the physical platform through the senses, but his reciprocation is happening through the mind. Right? That's the meaning of his bhav manifestation. Right? When Krishna never leaves Vrindavan, so he was always present to the residents of Vrindavan through this manifestation. So on the platform of the reciprocation on the mind and emotions, he's there and reciprocating, though not physically, sensually. Right? Does that make sense?
Maharaj, when Raman and Roy is trying to meditate on Krishna, and the form of Gauranga invades his meditation, will it be that simple?
Yeah, like that kind of thing. It's just, you know, it's just... Yeah, he just comes in and starts... But this is different from before, what we were talking about. Krishna actually personally appeared, and the senses were able to appreciate. And so one's overwhelmed, like that. So that's there's a difference between the sambhog, being with Krishna, and the separation. Right? But in here, the separation, there's a separation where one's thinking, and where the separation where he comes into that thinking. You know, you're thinking before you did this and you did that and he did this and did that. You're remembering what, you know, seems to happen. It means there's the concept of you're remembering the past. But it's Krishna, so he's present, so you get it's alive. But then there's this aspect appears here that he is dynamically exchanging with you on that platform. Does that make sense? So it's a pastime on the mental platform, you know, but it's, does that make sense? Rather than a manifest in the physical.
But it's not imagined.
It's not imagined, no. When Anurag is filled with unsurpassable and matchless magnificence of love, reaching the plateau of madness, it becomes Mahabhav. In this stage, even the blinking of an eyelid, veiling the view of the beloved, For less than a moment, right, it's 11th of a second, that's a nimisha, how much you've blinked, right, that becomes intolerable. And seconds stretch to eons. Separation for even a moment seems to expand to timeless eternity. In Mahabhava, both in union and separation, all the symptoms of Sattvika Bhava and Sanchari Bhava find their fullest expression. So Sattvika will mean the physical manifestations of ecstasy, you know, the trembling, hair standing on end, crying, how you say, stunning, being stunned, all these different things. They reach their fullest in this stage. And the Sanchari are 32 like sub states of the mind that therefore have there's a physical symptom for that. So those are always changing like that. So they reach their fullest expression. They're expressed before that, but their fullest expression will be here. So much of the time when they're giving examples, then they're giving it from that platform. In this shloka, Lord Chaitanya has very succinctly given us like an ocean bottled in a pitcher. A synopsis of the elaborate dissertation on the different gradations of the most sublime loving relationship with the Supreme Lord is found in the Priti Sandarbha by Srila Jiva Goswami. Right, so these are just... Okay, so this is the seventh. So he's explaining now this is what's happening here. Right, so that's what the seventh. Well, one moment is like 12 years or more. Like that, this is what is being explained. Okay, that was the footnote. Okay. These elevated regions of divine love are inaccessible to a practitioner, right, to a sadhaka. Means we hear about them so you know what you're looking at, but it's inaccessible, so it's not that you're going to sit down and relish them and, you know, get into them. No, you hear about it, and one is, you know, impressed. So one is convinced, yes, this is what we want to work for. But you're not going to sit there and relish them. No, like that. It says inaccessible. Like that. You know. Okay, sir. They say, like Shankaracharya would say, first come to Baba, then we'll talk. Right? He cannot taste the transcendental fruit. The sadhaka bhakta is incapable of absorbing and manifesting the tempestuous and contradictory emotions generated by pure spiritual love within himself. Right? They're contradictory and tempestuous. Right? They're just, it's like a storm going on, and it's contradictory storms. No. Like that. Generated by pure spiritual love within himself. Therefore, details of these topics have been deliberately excluded. So, the details are left out here. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. So, I guess the details must have been in those books that the Goswamis buried. Whatever's in the Granta Sumadhi, those are the books that gave detail. So whatever we're reading, that's not detail. But at the same time, there's some there because there are people on this level who are reading. But, you know, more detail than that, then it's not given. The different symptoms of ruchi, asakti, bhava, and prema described in this book are meant to give one the knowledge simply of how to recognize them. Right? Although there are sufficient shastric evidences regarding these subjects, they have not been mentioned. Because if one bases everything on evidences, then this subtle path shown by Guru and Krishna himself may be encumbered by unnecessary and harsh deceptions. Because the difficulty is also comes is that, as we see in the Chaitanya Shikshamrita, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is making elevated points like this, and then he's quoting the Upanishad, right? So we may or it means so that's the evidence we may or may not appreciate, because it says Raso Vaisaha, that Krishna is the ocean of, he is rasa, then that means all this is included, but we won't appreciate it. You get distracted by so many shlokas. And we see is that Bhaktivinoda Thakur did a similar thing when he's doing this Harinam Chintamani. There are no evidences given. It's just a discussion. And then Bhajan Rahasya, that gives all the evidences. Right? And also he does the same in Navadvipa Dham Mahatmya. You have the story of going around and seeing all the holy places, Jiva and Nityananda Prabhu, but there's no evidences given. Then in the second section is Praman Khanda, then he gives all the evidences, because otherwise it gets in the way of the story. Does that make sense? And we may get distracted and miss the point, get caught up in this term and all that. And does that make sense? Like that. The essence of everything discussed in this book can be presented in summary form. Ahankar, false pride, has two characteristics. Ahanta, self-engrossment, and mamata, attachment. By becoming attached to the body and everything related to the body, the jiva is kept enthralled. But by cultivating knowledge, these two characteristics of false pride are destroyed and the jiva becomes liberated. Right? So he's saying all this knowledge that's given here can be summarized as like this. So that's why understanding we're not the body, we're the soul, we're servant of Krishna, that's addressing this. So that's the beginning of if what that's appreciated, then these other things can come up. But if one can't appreciate relationship itself, then how will one appreciate all these aspects? You know what I'm saying? That's that. Right. So by cultivating knowledge, these two characteristics of false pride, you know, I am the material body and everything connected with the body is mine. Then one is liberated. Yes.
Maharaj, this ahankar, two characteristics of ahankar, is it sankarsana mamata and kamina?
Basically, but it says it's kept enthralled, so then that means there's all of it's there, but the point is if Sankarshan is understood and Aniruddha is understood, right? Then you can, the others will work out. Because from Shankarshan comes the inspiration, and from Aniruddha comes the endeavor. You know what I'm saying? So if you're looking at how to, yeah, and how to apply, you'd look there. But here, this is looking at where it's just keeping it as two. You know, so in other words, I am the controller is Ahanta, self-engrossment, and I am the enjoyer is Mamata. Right? So that's why there's so much emphasis on putting up, giving up the idea that I'm the I'm a controller and enjoyer. Because if that's given up, you're liberated. But as long as it's there, one won't be liberated. Something less. Yes.
When Srila Prabhupada says I and mine.
Yes, I and mine is the same thing. I and mine is the same thing.
Is that the Karana Sharira?
Is that?
Karana Sharira.
The Karana Sharira. You could say yes. Because it's what doesn't go away. Yeah.
It also says that on the platform it dissolves.
Yes, it dissolves.
What does it mean now?
What does it mean? Does it dissolve?
Is it a mentality?
Does it, does it a little puff of smoke? Does it just little bubbles and goes away? Or just some light comes and then disappears? Or suddenly a hole and drops away and closes again? Or
my question is, can we give it up before that platform?
That's what one is trying to do. One gives it up enough to get to that platform. Because what you're giving up at that platform is even more subtle. You know what I'm saying? So if the one has given that up, then yes, then it's a matter of your advancement is dependent upon your developing that attachment for Krishna, identity as his servant and attachment to Krishna. Now, what are those these things before describing? All the sneha and raga and anuraga. These are describing that the identity as Krishna's servant, I mean, you know, that relationship with Krishna is getting more and more deep. And the element of trying to please Krishna and that taste gain is getting deeper and deeper. So all that, these are still only manifestations of the I and mine. But now these are on the pure platform, the natural platform. Well, when it becomes applied here, it's a problem. So it's not that it changes. It's just that the flavor changes. So when you're discussing this flavor, you deal with it in that flavor. But it does have connection to all these other things. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
When you say the essence of everything discussed in this book means the harmony.
That, yeah, Madhurya Kadambini. Because this is Vishwanath speaking. So he's basically pointing out is that that's the essence. Because it's these two. So in their negative, you're in the material world. You get rid of that negative, you're liberated. But then when you apply those two in the positive, then one goes deeper and deeper into the ocean of devotional service. Right? Does that make sense? So sometimes we say, oh, you know, this I and mine, or envy and attachment. That's basic stuff. I've heard this. Now we want to get into all this high stuff. No, this is the same thing. Just the one is the perversion of it, and this is the positive of it. Because it's always describing, you know, what is the mood, what's done, what's the identity. You know, one feels oneself, and one sees Krishna as, you know, it's always describing those things. You know, and one feels. So it's just describing the same thing. Prema is defined as the state when the jiva thinks himself a member of the Lord's family and his eternal servant, and he worships only the Supreme Lord and his eternal associates. Meditating in this way, through knowledge of the self, Ahanta, the jiva desires to serve the Lord and his eternal associates, and develops attachment, mamata, for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay? So it's just showing the two extremes. When it's not seen in relationship to the Lord, then these are what bind us. And when they are seen in relationship with the Lord, this is what is deepening our relationship. In other words, these two points is what defines our relationship with the Lord. Right? how they are, you know, deep towards him or how they are deep away from him. That make sense? So this is what is acharya, right? They can give all these fine detail and then make it so simple that it goes. So that's the importance of being able to appreciate principles. Right? That's why so much emphasis is put, because those two things you can always use and apply anywhere and anything. Right? So then, it was like Bhaktivinoda Thakura, he says, all the subject matter in this book can be divided into two things, matter and spirit. Right? So that's why they're able to see the essence, and then they're able to give that full explanation down, you know, in particular application to what the subject matter is. Right? Because Krishna is unlimited, unlimited subject matter, so unlimited explanations. Right? So this is one, you know, the practical explanation in a particular situation. Right? Okay. So so then today's Tuesday. So Thursday. Then we'll finish with this page. He gives a synopsis of the book. Right, he's given that essential point that you can always see it in connection with that. You know, the I and mine, how I am the body, or I am servant of Krishna, and mine is whatever's in connection with my body is mine, or, you know, Krishna is mine. Or I'm part of that Krishna scene. Okay?
It's possible.
His
posse.
Yes, his posse. Okay. So then finish that and then go on to Bhajan Rahasya. So that now that we've, you know, clearly seen all these levels, Bhajan Rahasya is describing detail according to those levels. So now it'll be, you know, it's the natural next step.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Janitai Gaura Premanandi.